Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing just fine there, Justin. How are you?
Doing wonderful. About to go on vacation, or I'm going to be on vacation, so whatever. I'm in a good mood.
Well, by the time this goes up, you'll be back.
Yeah, I hope so. I just want to say this really quick. I love all of our listeners. I love you no matter what. And I love you, whether whatever race, gender, whatever it is, I love you all. And thank you so much for listening. And tonight's episode is one that divides people. And I hope that you hear us out. And I hope that you understand that we took this on with passion and with trying to be gentle towards both sides of the argument here. So with that, what are we going to talk about tonight, Aaron?
We're talking tonight about the Trayvon Martin shooting, which I would say probably kicked off our current state of this focus on the police. And while this shooting wasn't a police shooting, it definitely got people thinking about when is it appropriate for someone to be shot and start to analyze just why people are shot and when they're shot. And why the laws are like they are. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this was a very controversial case where George Zimmerman, who had a conceal and carry license and was a gun owner and a kind of self-proclaimed neighborhood watch guy, thought he was witnessing something that was going astray. I think most people know the story, so we're not, no spoilers here, but he ends up shooting Trayvon Martin, who is a younger man and who was in the neighborhood and looked like he was doing something wrong. There's a lot more to the story than that. And a lot of people bring up gun control laws, stand your ground laws. But really, at the end of the day, it's an argument of self-defense. But how does that go when you're the one that's alive and the person that you shot is dead? I mean, it's a mangled web. We hope that you understand that.
Yeah, there's definitely issues there where one person can speak up and say, well, here's how it went down. But then you don't get the other side. But I think you'd agree, we definitely believe in the right to defend yourself. But as we go through this case, we might actually touch upon whether that's applicable here necessarily.
Yeah, I 100% think somebody has the right to defend themselves. I 100% think if somebody's on top of you beating you, you do have the right to defend yourself. There's other issues at play here. So the events that happened was essentially we have George Zimmerman driving in his car, right? And it's a rainy day. It's Florida. And he comes across, and just a little background, George Zimmerman has called the police on many other occasions, reporting suspicious activity, reporting other people that have broken in and done robberies in the neighborhood. And he is the active role of the neighborhood watch. So this isn't anything new for him. He's been doing it.
It sets up a precedence that this isn't something that he just decided to do all of a sudden. He's been actively doing this. And the police seem to be aware of it.
They know who he is, and they know how it's going down. He spots Trayvon walking. He diverts from his current path to follow him. And he calls. I wasn't sure if he called 911 or if he just called the dispatcher. But he's on the phone with the dispatcher. And in the very second sentence of the call, he gives the dispatcher an address of where he's at, who he is, and what he is observing. So they know where he's at, and they're, you know, quote unquote, sending a squad car. During the 911 call, he actually says, the guy I'm watching is staring at me. So Trayvon is actually noticed George Zimmerman in his car following him. And they've acknowledged each other. They know each other exists. Goes on to describe the kid and describe what's going on. He says that he looks like he's on drugs or he's messed up. At that point, about 2 minutes into the call, it was about a 4 minute call. You hear him getting out of his car. You hear the dinging of his door. And then you hear George Zimmerman kind of walking and having a conversation. And he mentions that he's following him. And the dispatcher says, you don't need to do that. Now, by law, George can get out of his car. By law, George is free to do whatever he wants. He does not have to listen to that dispatcher. But a dispatcher is going to tell you everything they can to keep you out of trouble. And they're going to tell you everything they can so they're not liable for your actions. And so they're going to say, don't step off that cliff. You might hurt yourself. Don't follow that guy. Something bad might happen. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are, well, for one, he didn't call 911. He called the non-emergency police response line, which tells me he probably did do his homework here. He understood, you know, a lot of people just call 911 because it's easier than looking up a police phone number. He actually was prepared to call this non-emergency line. And so right there, I think it further cements this idea that this is something he'd been planning to do and he's taking it seriously. So maybe some credit to Zimmerman here for that. But by getting out of his vehicle, here's where I think we have our first piece of evidence of something not right. And I think what that is he's now taking the law into his hands. Because from the car, he can just report what's going on. The police can decide to dispatch a unit to check this situation out if they like. But that's not what we're seeing happen here. Zimmerman's, while he's on the phone with the police, he's choosing to continue to pursue this suspect or someone he considers a suspect.
Just been told not to follow Trayvon, and he continues walking. And we know he continues walking because he's told not to follow him like seconds after he gets out of his car. And he disregards the, you know, the advice from the dispatcher. And he continues walking for about 2 minutes is the remainder of the call. And then the call's cut off. At that point is pretty much when he's encountered Trayvon Martin. Now, some say that he had actually walked down a sidewalk and Trayvon had darted between two houses or townhomes or something like a sidewalk. And Zimmerman had passed him. And then Zimmerman was on his way back to his car when Trayvon cut him off or ambushed him or whatever the rhetoric is, but they met at that point. Nobody actually knows what was said or what really happened. All we have is Zimmerman's side of the story, which is he came upon Trayvon. Trayvon said, "You got a problem?" And George Zimmerman said, "No, I don't." And Trayvon said, "Well, now you do." And they got into a fight.
Well, we should think about this call because he is on this call. It's recorded. And the dispatcher is asking questions about Trayvon Martin. He's asking questions. He asks him if he knows the subject's race. And Zimmerman answers black. Now, I know out there on the internet, there has been some question about what exactly Zimmerman said in this call, that maybe he sounded a bit racist. But I can say that from my reading, I've been able to discern that, or at least figure out that some of the audio has been edited out there to make it sound like he's racist perhaps or something. But the actual dispatch call, no. The unedited call, he's just answering questions.
He answered all their questions and he gave descriptions. So it was pretty straightforward for that.
It's straightforward. The dispatcher wants to know which way Trayvon's going. It seems like the dispatcher is fine with Zimmerman watching where he's going, but he's actually asked at one point, because Zimmerman says he's running, and the dispatcher asks, he's running? Which way is he running? The dispatcher asks, are you following him? And Zimmerman answers, yeah. And the dispatcher responds, we don't need you to do that. And so you do get the idea that the dispatcher does not really want Zimmerman following Trayvon this way.
And about the time he says he's running and he says he's following him is about the time that Zimmerman has just gotten out of his car. So I think Trayvon saw him get out of his car and started running. That's the chronological order. And so Trayvon's obviously afraid of what's coming at him. So he's running.
That will be in some dispute. Some will say that he's perhaps scared of Zimmerman because he doesn't know what he's going to do to him. But other people would say, well, if he's running, he's guilty of something. I would suspect that he doesn't want Zimmerman trailing him. He's done with that, and he's just going to try and get away.
There's one other thing that's said on the phone call, and Zimmerman actually says, these assholes, they always get away. He doesn't make reference to race, but a lot of people can construe a lot of things from that statement. But we can look at it and say, well, does he just mean these assholes, these people that rob me, these people that are breaking into cars, or does he mean a specific race? At that point, I have to actually give Zimmerman a little bit of credit here. He used to mentor African-American kids. He used to do a lot of community services. And I think he actually testified against some white police officers who had beaten an African-American teen. So not completely in line with a horrible racist person. He definitely is somewhat prejudiced against people that are wandering around his neighborhood because he has this notion that they're only there to steal from him.
He also voted for Obama. What's that?
I didn't know about his voting record.
Well, there's other information too. I believe he even dated a black woman. What I would say is that if you dig into his past, it really seems as though he isn't racist. But let's think again why he's there. He's there in this situation because he's taken it upon himself to be a neighborhood watchdog. Okay? And when he says these assholes always get away, I believe it's because he's taken this position because it irks him that people are thieving in his neighborhood. And he's done with it. He wants to put a stop to this. And I think he feels like by having boots on the ground, which are his, that he'll have some control over the situation and possibly end it to where he doesn't, like, people know that's not a neighborhood you want to go into if you're thinking about stealing anything.
I think we can go to the altercation. I mean, essentially, we're not quite sure how the physical altercation started, but we know when it ended, Trayvon was on top of George, beating the crap out of him. at some point, George pulled his weapon and fired a shot, and that shot connected and the fight was over. Here's where I have a sort of an issue, because both of us went and got our conceal and carry license. Both of us took the class and did the training. In my conceal and carry license, my class that I took, it was literally 8 hours of role playing how to evade conflict. And we role played different scenarios. One of the scenarios was actually you're driving along in your car. You see a man beating a woman. You have your gun on you. What do you do? And the first person in class raises their hand and they say, I get out of the car. And my instructor, who is a police officer, says, no, no, you don't. You stay in your car no matter what. Because as soon as you get out of the car, you are a threat and you're showing intent with a deadly weapon. Now, we're in Missouri. We're not in Florida, but our conceal and carry does work in Florida. We can go there and carry our weapons. One more thing is, when I was growing up, I was a skateboarder, and I routinely was harassed and bullied by teenagers, football players, whatever, because I was different. Because in the Midwest in the mid-90s, skateboarding was not acceptable at that point. I had long hair, dyed it blue and red. There were numerous occasions where car full of guys would be rolling down the street. They would spot me. They would roll down their windows and yell stuff at me, yell what they're going to do to me, whatever. And as long as they stayed in their car, I was cool. As long as we could have a dialogue through a window, I'm okay. But as soon as those guys stopped their car and jumped out, I knew they were serious. I knew that they were a threat. There was actually one occasion where I was walking home, middle of the night, broke my skateboard in half, and a carload of guys rolls up. Driver rolls down the window and says, we're going to mess you up, dude. And I said, okay. I had nowhere really to run. It was a kind of a desolate road. There was a wooded area, but there was multiple guys in the car. As soon as that driver opened the door and his foot touched the asphalt, I kicked his driver's side door closed as hard as I could because I was outnumbered. I attacked first because I was threatened. And after I did that, I ran away as fast as I could. And that guy screamed. I probably broke his leg. I do not care. Because I know if all those guys got out of the car, I was dead meat. Because as soon as you get out of the car, I'm sorry, you're a threat now. You know, if you get out of the car, you're kind of picking a fight. I know that might not be totally true in every case, but that's how I perceive it. Because that's what I've pretty much learned all through my life was somebody harassing me gets out of their car. That's when it gets serious. That's when it's real, you know? In your conceal and carry class, what did you learn? Like, how would you have responded to this situation?
Well, people who haven't taken this course probably have no idea and might even question what we're saying, but it's true. They say that you don't take this course just to learn how to protect yourself physically. You learn how to protect yourself legally. You know, they say it in the Spider-Man films, but with great power comes great responsibility. That you've been given this permit to conceal a weapon on yourself, now you're subject to a lot more trouble. And so they stress that. They say, understand what you're doing by getting this permit. We're not saying you shouldn't do it, but we're saying you really are going to find that this isn't about being a hero. This is something that if it really comes down to your life's on the line or your family's lives are on the line and you have to draw your weapon, you better be damn well sure that it is a critical moment of life or death, because if it's not, you're likely to be chewed up and swallowed by the system. It's important that if you take this course, that you listen to your instructors. I would say as to the fact that getting out of the vehicle is a threat, I totally believe that. It's a very short amount of time. Zimmerman ends his call at 7:13 p.m. the first police officer gets on the scene at 7:17 p.m. So probably less than 4 minutes. I would say it's probably just a couple minutes. Something bad goes down. If we think about the call just from Zimmerman's side, because we know Trayvon was on with his girlfriend. I think she was 16. He's 17. Zimmerman's on the phone with this non-emergency call dispatcher. I would say Zimmerman is clearly saying that Trayvon's trying to get away. But he's pursuing Trayvon. If I had to make a decision here based on what I've read, I would say that Trayvon did his best to get away. And that he felt that Zimmerman wasn't going to let him go and made a decision to stand his ground.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
With all the evasion that I was taught in my class, following somebody, getting out of the car, and literally pursuing in a foot chase is not evading. I've heard some people say that, oh, he got out because he was trying to give an address. No, he had already given the address in the beginning of the call. He said, oh, he got out to see where Trayvon Martin was going. Well, yeah, that's exactly what he did. He was following him. He was getting himself into a situation that could be dangerous. And he did it with a firearm on his beltline. Here's a scenario that happened to me. Just a couple weeks ago, I was at home. I got a phone call from the wife. She's telling me that there is a man at her shop that's freaking her out. She's getting a very bad vibe, and she doesn't know if he's there to do her harm or what. And she wants me there pronto. When I said, maybe you should call the police, she says, I don't want to do that because if he's just weird and awkward or something's odd about him and he's not here to be a jerk, I don't want to call the police. Like, I don't know if it justifies a 911 call. As I walked out the door, I took my gun off my belt and left it at home because somebody's messing with my wife. Somebody could be causing her harm. Guess what? I'm going to probably go in guns blazing. And I know this. I know my emotions are going to take over. So I left my gun at home and I drove to her store faster than I should have. And I confronted the guy and he left immediately. Now, that's to me the responsible thing to do when you have a concealed carry permit. Most people that I've told that story to say, no, you should have taken your gun with you. That's the exact time you should. And I completely disagree with that. So here we are back at this situation. He has a gun on him and he pursued somebody. You want to go get into a fight? You want to go to the bar with the gun on you and go find a drunk guy and follow him around until he gets pissed off at you? Because you think, well, he might drive home drunk, so I want to make sure he doesn't do that. I mean, it's a touchy situation here. And I think in regards to the responsibility of having a gun permit, you have to be a little bit smarter and make better choices and decisions when it comes to engaging in something that could turn out to be a conflict. Trayvon's shot and killed. Now, here's where everything blows up, right, Aaron? This is where it gets really interesting with the media and how we paint people, how pretty much George Zimmerman is now painted as a KKK member, and first pictures of Trayvon Martin are posted, and it shows him as a young kid with his Letterman jacket on, and then you get pictures of Trayvon and, you know, his Twitter feed flipping off the camera, throwing up gang signs, really painting a bad picture of him. They bring up Trayvon having trouble in school. They bring up him having drugs on him. When people bring up George Zimmerman's background, it's interesting because George Zimmerman had actually been arrested two times prior to the event. One of the times Zimmerman was arrested for assaulting a police officer. And a second time, it was a domestic violence. The domestic violence call was pretty much charges were dropped, but him and his girlfriend got restraining orders against each other. And in the assaulting a police officer call, he took a alcohol diversion class, so the charges were dropped to a misdemeanor. Now, if either one of those charges was not dropped, he stood the chance of having his conceal and carry license revoked. Because if you have domestic violence or any kind of violence on your record, you no longer can carry a weapon. What are some other things about, like, Trayvon that they bring up about him? I mean, they really paint a bad picture of him in the media. So what?
No, I saw it both ways, actually, for both of these people. For Trayvon, I saw good stuff. I saw bad stuff. Same with Zimmerman. There were people essentially had already joined a team and were steadily pumping information onto the internet through Twitter and YouTube everywhere. And yeah, and it really bothers me. We've seen it in other cases too, like Michael Brown, where you have basically someone that's just about a grown man or already a grown man. And then you see a picture of them at like 14 or 13. Mm-hmm. And I just, it bothers me. It's manipulation. And I don't like seeing this manipulation. I like to see what did they look like at the time. Surely we have pictures. And sure enough, we saw them later on. Trayvon did not have a criminal record. And I don't know how far we have to get into it. But police obscured the, let's say, the trouble he'd gotten into for their own reasons. And you'll see a lot made of this on right-wing websites stating that, you know, he would have had a criminal record had the police done their duty. This has to do with Trayvon was found with stolen goods. And he was also found with a screwdriver that was obviously used to break into places with. The police could have arrested him. And that he would have been locked up at the time instead of being shot by George Zimmerman. I want to say right now, though, that I think that's neither here nor there. You can say the police didn't do their job, but just because Trayvon was possibly a thief, I don't think you can stretch it to say, well, if he was shot, that's his problem. Just because you could be a criminal doesn't mean you deserve to die. So I think we should toss that out right now. You know, we've seen the hashtag out there, Black Lives Matter. And then, of course, there are people with hashtags saying All Lives Matter. Well, I would be on the latter, but it's easy for me. I'm not part of a group that feels like they've been oppressed. Yeah, I'm just not in that situation. But I think we would make better progress if we treated everyone the same. And it's, there's too much taking sides. We see with Zimmerman, you had, you and I are all for, the Second Amendment, but this idea that just because George Zimmerman quote unquote defended himself, that we have these gun people supporting him blindly, that disgusts me. You know, why don't we get all of the information in and make a decision then instead of just, oh, he used his gun and he should have because he's defending himself. It doesn't work like that. We've already said he pursued Trayvon. Trayvon tried to get away. It's not as though he was just driving along and all of a sudden Trayvon attacked him. He pursued Trayvon for a while before there was an altercation between the two of them.
So they paint Trayvon as a thug, as a misfit, as a criminal. I get that. But one, I don't really care what's on his Twitter feed. If most of us had Twitter when we were 16 years old, I can only imagine the terrible things that we would be posting or tweeting. I'm glad that there wasn't social media when I was a teenager, because if it could be used against me, that's pretty bad. You know, and just for all the listeners, I'm almost 40 years old now, and I'm a pretty successful IT guy in a Fortune 500 company. But when I was Trayvon Martin's age, I'd been arrested for trespassing and vandalism and charged and convicted. I was also arrested for Grand Theft Auto. Charges were dropped, but I was still arrested for it. And I was arrested for loitering. I was skateboarding in front of a convenience store, but it was still considered trespassing and loitering. I had three arrests on my record by the time I was Trayvon Martin's age. Does that make me a horrible person? Does that make me worthy of being shot if I got into an altercation with somebody? Like when I kicked that guy's door closed on him, should he have shot me and then use my criminal record against me? It's just perception. Personally, if you look at Trayvon Martin and my record, I'm way worse than he is. But when I look at him, I just see a typical teenager. Might not be the best teenager, but he definitely wasn't the worst either.
Right, and there's no indication to me that Trayvon was a violent individual. And if you want to look at it from a violent standpoint, Zimmerman's the one that shows the violent streak. He's the one with the domestic abuse charge.
And assaulting a police officer. Now they say Trayvon got into a fight at school. Well, I know a lot of people that got into fights in high school. So I don't, does that mean he's a violent kid? It's one of those things where I cannot just say that he is a worthless scumbag because he got into a fight in high school. I can't say he's worthless because I see a Twitter picture with him flipping off the camera. That to me is any typical teenager today.
Well, let's talk about something important here, which is Zimmerman claimed Trayvon reached for his gun, tried to get his gun from him.
Yeah, he said that in the scuffle, his shirt was pulled up, revealing his gun. And Trayvon said, "You're going to die." And he pulled his gun out and shot Trayvon.
That's very, very difficult for me to understand. They're in very close proximity to one another. And when I took a look at this, you know, the examiners look over everything. They found a scar on one of Martin's fingers. They found an abrasion on another finger. But they couldn't find any gunshot residue on his hands, which would tell me that he likely didn't have his hands anywhere near the gun when he was shot.
The evidence points to his hands were on Zimmerman, but not on the firearm.
Right, and weren't even close. But, see, the way I look at it is, it sounds to me as though George Zimmerman decided to pull his weapon and shoot Trayvon because he was getting beaten. Again, this is going to come down to how people feel about, did Trayvon have a right to protect himself from someone who was being awfully aggressive towards him?
Let's say I take Zimmerman's word for it completely. Okay? Well, here you are with a firearm, with a gun on you, and you've put yourself now in a situation where your firearm can be used against you. I don't have a lot of sympathy there. I just don't. I wish he would have stayed out of the situation so it hadn't occurred. I can 100% take George Zimmerman's word for it, and I still find fault in his actions and decisions right there, because it turns into a situation where the last 15 seconds, sure, he defended himself using deadly force. And if all you look at is that moment in time, then he's totally justified. But you can't just look at one mere moment. You have to get all the moments leading up. I mean, when we look at any other murder case, we look at Jodi Arias, whatever, there are things leading up to the event, and you have to take those things into consideration. You don't just look at that final moment where somebody murders somebody. You have to look at what led up to this. Was it, you know, preconceived? Were they planning it? Was it, you know, what other decisions could they have made? And in this case, if you look at the 4 minutes leading up, there were a lot of options for George Zimmerman to remove himself from the situation. And then if you look at the last 15 seconds, George Zimmerman only had one option. So how do you rectify that one?
I agree. You can take Zimmerman at his word from beginning to end. You can put everything he says and just say, okay, this is all true. And it still doesn't work out. It doesn't work out in his favor, at least from where I sit, for all the reasons you say. And we're somewhat colored by having taken the concealed carry course. And for whatever reason, I would blame the governor here, Governor Rick Scott. He could have taken this concealed carry permit away from George Zimmerman, but he chose not to. He said because there's no felony, that he said that he doesn't have the right to pull it, to revoke the permit. But I think this is dangerous.
No, it is. There was another case of a YouTuber guy that I actually watched. His name was, I think it's James Yeager, and he's a gun advocate on YouTube. He actually gives a lot of good advice, and I was watching him at the time. And during some wannabe gun ban law passage, James said, "You come and get my guns, and I'll shoot you all." He makes an idle threat on YouTube, and they revoked his conceal and carry permit for a verbal threat. Now, you can say, well, he threatened the government. He threatened the president. He did this thing, so we had to take action. But in all reality, his threat was words. George Zimmerman has actions under his belt. And since the event, he's been arrested and had lots of run-ins with the law of violent natures, and where he's threatened his girlfriend or wife with a shotgun to her head, and they still to this day have not revoked his license, which doesn't make any sense to me, because to me, you want a responsible gun owner to be able to carry. You do not want somebody that appears to be a loose cannon. This goes to trial, right? Because at first, George Zimmerman was cleared when he interviewed with the police officers. They cleared of him all wrongdoing, because it's literally his word against a dead man's. But it goes to trial because of public awareness and public pressure, because somebody's dead.
This is a few years ago, three years ago, that he turns himself in on April 11th, 2012, or at least according to the lawyer.
Now, I don't want to get into a lot of the legal melee that happened with bond and all those things, because to me, they didn't really matter that much, because that's just legal play. That's what defense and prosecutors do. But
take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
There is some speculation that the state of Florida, the prosecutor, didn't try very hard to go after Zimmerman, didn't try very hard to go after a conviction. George ended up getting acquitted. He ended up getting charges dropped. And a lot of people speculate about the reasons why. And I was very obsessed with this case when it happened, and I watched all the video, all the courtroom video and everything. And essentially, and something we kind of skipped over was, at the time of the event, Trayvon Martin was on the phone with his girlfriend, or his friend that was female. You know, it's up in the air whether they were in a relationship.
Yeah, I did mention it earlier.
And he was, yeah, I mean, and he was talking to her about this crazy cracker's following him. He's telling her, like, somebody's following me, and he's trying to evade that person. She is a key witness for Trayvon. She is a key witness for the prosecutor. She is essentially their ace in the hole. All she has to do is take the stand and say, Trayvon feared for his life and he was defending himself. That's it. Like, that's all she has to say. And the case against George is a strong one. And I watched the hours of trial testimony where she took the stand. She took this weird attitude and she was combative towards both the defense attorney for George and the prosecutor who was trying to prosecute the man that's killed her boyfriend. And I swear, Aaron, I don't think there's any, I don't think the prosecutor tried like to throw the case. I think his ace in the hole, which was Trayvon's girlfriend, blew the entire case. Cause when you watch her, you get upset. She just didn't even seem like she wanted to be there. And it really upset me because I felt that all she had to do was just stick to a very short script and this would have been a closed case, really.
Well, I would urge you to keep in mind, and I don't dispute what you're saying. You're saying that she ruined the case for Trayvon's family. I agree, but you have to look at her age too. For all I know, she was sitting there thinking, I'd rather be 1,000 places than here. Trayvon's already gone. I can't bring him back. I have no idea what she's thinking, but it seemed to me that she did not want to be there. And she did not speak very well. She did not, I don't know how much time they had to prep with her, but she did not care whether anybody understood what she was saying or not. I didn't find her easy to understand myself.
She started mumbling. Mm-hmm. And just really withdrawn. I again, whether or not it's an attitude thing or if it's a she just doesn't want to be there thing, but to me that's her shining moment to bring Trayvon justice. Maybe I'm being a little harsh on her, but I thought this was a pretty straightforward case, and I was really surprised that they did not get anything on George. And that's just the way it is. I mean, I'm not heartbroken about it. I'm more fascinated by the way the process works than the outcome.
The jury had three choices: second-degree murder, manslaughter, or not guilty. And if you look over their choices, it is strange that they didn't get manslaughter, but again, it probably rested on this young woman. And since she totally dropped the ball, they really only had to consider whether they thought Zimmerman was telling the truth or not. And I think there is some confusion over what right does someone have to protect themselves if they're constantly putting themselves in a situation that's dangerous or is starting trouble, which Zimmerman did. We can sit here from afar and say, oh, well, he just kept going after Trayvon. I mean, it wasn't like Trayvon had just attacked some women or he was running off with a television or something. To me, it's just crazy that he would pursue someone this much and this far and this long for a suspicion.
Who's not actively doing anything.
Yeah, he's not actively committing a crime that we're aware of. It's like a pre-crime thing. To me, George Zimmerman, he had the right to do what he did in terms of, yeah, he can follow somebody, but I think he's responsible because Trayvon's not the one who followed him. And again, as you said, we need to look at all the circumstances leading up to the event, and it's all Zimmerman. I'm sure I'm echoing what everyone else has been saying, but just look at what George Zimmerman has done with his freedom since. This is a guy who just, he keeps finding trouble.
Yeah, since then, he's gotten some speeding tickets, which, oh well. But then he threatens his wife, says that he punched her father and threatened her with a gun. Yeah, that's not good.
The only other thing I can touch upon here is that George Zimmerman was attacked by Trayvon. He was beaten. He had a fractured nose. He was beat up. But again, I'd refer back to what you said. You know, here's an armed person. Now, whether Trayvon knew or not, it's beside the point. George knew. He knew he was carrying a firearm. He decided to pursue this young guy, and he kept going after him. He's the one who pushed this to the breaking point. So all I can say is, at the end of all this, I think Trayvon died a needless death because someone ignored their training, tried to take the law into their own hands, even though there was no apparent crime going on. I don't know how he lives with this. I think that just goes to show what kind of character George Zimmerman is. He's someone that just does not care. His being irked or being upset by someone who is possibly a break-and-enter thief, that's something that's more important than whether that person lives or dies, and I think that's a real problem.
I'm a little appalled that the gun ownership community or the NRA didn't distance themselves from this situation. They embraced it, which doesn't really bode well. You know, that doesn't make responsible gun owners look good. Here I am not carrying my weapon to something that I perceive could be an altercation. I will not go into a conflict while I'm armed. I mean, when I drive around in my car, I got really bad road rage. But if I have my weapon on me, I'm cool as a Hindu cow. Somebody cuts me off, I'm like, I just got to deal with it because I don't want to escalate this because I don't want to go to a firearm to resolve my situation. When you read YouTube comments, when you read comments on any of these shootings, there's a line, there's a divide. It's either this guy's a murderer or this guy's a hero who got rid of vermin. And where's the middle? You know, where's the people that are like, this could have had a different outcome? You know, where are the gun owners that are like, I'd rather seen everyone walk away alive? And it's sad that that's not what you see in the media or online. You only see the extremes on both sides. And I'm sure that I've probably been categorized to one of those sides already, yet I carry my gun on me all the time. And I do believe in my right to carry that firearm. But I think the system needs to work a little bit better when it comes to other people. The laws are supposed to keep guns out of criminals' hands. Well, what's a criminal? A criminal is somebody that breaks the law. A criminal is somebody that threatens others with harm. And here we have somebody that I would label as a criminal, yet he still has his conceal and carry license. The YouTuber guy, he wasn't in Florida, so it's a bad comparison, but
It shows what could be. You know, what's reasonable here? It's reasonable that you would show somebody, hey, just because you have a gun doesn't give you the right to start threatening people like that. Again, it's the responsibility here. And so they did the right thing by showing that guy, there's responsibility here. You didn't uphold your end of the bargain with George. That guy just keeps getting passes. And I hope it doesn't blow up in their face, because they're certainly taking a lot of risk doing what they've done.
Well, I mean, and here's the what if. What if he ends up shooting somebody like his wife or his girlfriend? Well, now you got all the left side anti-gun people saying, told you so. And then you have the right side pro-gun people saying, well, you know, it's no responsible gun owner would shoot their wife. Well, they don't do it until it happens. They're a responsible gun owner until they're not. And that's something that I think needs to be addressed. And when you show signs of not being responsible anymore, well, maybe we need to revisit that. But driving a car and owning a gun are two different things. One's a privilege, one's a right. And if you abuse your privilege or show that you're not a responsible driver, they can revoke your privilege. But as soon as you try to revoke somebody's right, you're going to get a fight on your hands. You know, just imagine if they tried to revoke your or regulate your right to vote or regulate your right to freedom of speech or whatever. You're going to fight them on that. And the Second Amendment is a right, and people are going to fight tooth and nail for it, just like they're going to fight for the First Amendment.
Well, concealed carry is a little
Second
different,
right? No. Yeah, that's more of a privilege, especially in the state of Florida.
Well, you have to apply for it, and you have to, yeah, there's just more to this, but I know what you're saying. For a lot of these, the pro-gun crowd, they're going to confuse the two. They're not going to take it as, oh, it was a privilege that could be revoked. They're just saying he didn't do anything wrong because he was defending himself, and they'll defend him to the end.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.